The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the program today Ed Davis. He joins us right here in studio in Yellow Springs, Ohio, or should I say Shawnee Springs, Ohio. No, that's not right. I'm kind of confused, though, because I've just read Ed's new story collection. It's called Here Where We Stand. And these stories, they seem really familiar to me, having lived in Yellow Springs for the last 33 years. They seem... I don't know. There's something about them where they really remind me of this town.
Well, that's no coincidence, Vic. Since this is my kind of gift to the town, it's a fictionalization of Yellow Springs, Ohio. And yet I call it Shawnee Springs, Ohio, as I did in my second novel that was about the saving of Whitehall Farm. So it's a pleasure to be able to present this to my beloved village, and I'm hoping it'll be received as a gift of love.
But it's all fiction. So anybody reading this is going to go, no, that's not me.
Right.
That's not the restaurant where I go to eat. That's not the coffee shop where I hang out. That's not the nature preserve where I like to go. It's all fiction, mm-hmm. Right?
Well, yes and no. I've changed the names, and in some cases quite a bit, and I have been inspired by local people, but there are no local people per se in the book. Oh, some people might recognize Bill Felker as the model for Declan Quinn in the story South. And Bill was in my writing group, so he was around for the evolution of that story, and he's fine with my borrowing his reputation. But the sites certainly are familiar. Glenora Wood is Glen Helen, of course.
And of course, Bill Felker, his dulcet tones were heard on these airwaves for many, many years with Poor Will's Almanac. And I recognized, knowing Bill and having him appear on this program a number of times, he's been a colleague of mine for many years. In fact, he still is, because we both still write for the Dayton Daily News.
Right.
And I recognized him from your depiction, your fictional depiction, but this is a very different guy. Other than the really kind of religious background, which they share, this character in your book is quite different from Bill.
Extremely. He's a big man. He's got this backstory of a demanding, devouring mother, none of which is Bill. As far as I know, the fictionalization is total.
Ed, I've got to guess that this has been a long process for you to write these stories. For one thing, you thank Susan Carpenter in your credits, and I'm guessing that this goes back a ways as far as your work on this, because she's no longer with us, and it's been a while. I'm guessing that you collaborated with her, you worked with her, you were in groups with her.
Mm-hmm. Totally, yeah. Antioch Writers Workshop. And these stories, so many of them are about mourning, you know, about death and grief. And I've been asked, well, you know, why did you set out to write, you know, all these stories about grief? Well, no, but it's my life, and I have lost a lot of dear writing friends. Suzanne Clouser, Sandy Love, Susan Carpenter. Susan was around for these stories for a while, and then, you know, she sort of checked out.
Well, a lot of these people have been on this program. Of course, Bill Felker, Suzanne Clouser was on the show, Susan Carpenter. You also mentioned Diane Chittister. She's mm-hmm. been on the show, and I have to think that as you were writing these, you were very careful that as you were talking about people's troubles, that you didn't really echo identical troubles of people that would recognize themselves. We all have our problems. We all have our losses and our grief. And you've got people in here who are dealing with a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. You start off with this, is it Marla?
Marla McIntyre.
She's very angry.
Yeah.
And sad. And kind of locked up inside herself. How did you get the idea for this character?
Yeah, that's a good question, Vic. That one, you know, the first one in the collection. There was an incident that happened in the summer during the pandemic years ago with kittens being adopted and fostered next door. And that was quite the issue that summer. And I got to thinking about the relationship of people on our lovely Talus Drive, where I live, and the relationships of nature and community and all that. And Marla, not everybody responds to grief with the anger that she does, and yet I have seen it in mm-hmm. people before. And she just sort of rose fully formed, I guess. And it was easy to enhance her. And funny that some people find Marla hilarious. And there are some funny things that happen as she excoriates people, you know, like poor Craig, the bird watcher who shows up on her door. Well, you know, these people, the community shows up on her doorstep and she has to, they demand gently that she deals with them. And she does angrily. And yet her anger is so over the top. And her language gets so colorful that I can see the response of some people. At least one guy in town I respect a lot, a writer, said, I found the story hilarious. Took me back a little because it does have all that anger and grief, the horrific grief of losing not only your husband, but your teenage son.
Well, her rejection of the soup at the beginning is emblematic of her rejection of everybody around her.
Yeah. If you can't accept a bowl of soup, you know, what is wrong with you? And she's sensitive to their commentary that they may be making about her to the extent that she, you know, she blows up and hurls curses over there and then figures out later they're probably talking about the kitty cats, not about Marla.
And she's killing her pain.
She's
drinking the wine and she's trying to kill the pain, and we all know that doesn't work. And this woman who leaves the soup for her, tell us about her.
I consider Bea Conyers the heart of the book for me. And I will say she's based on a beloved neighbor who has dogs. And, you know, when you have dogs, you're out there in the world and you're interacting with other people with dogs. And my neighbor has this knack to always know the exact right thing to say to people who are suffering. And hey, Vic, we're all aging, you know, and we're all suffering something. So she's got that knack. So I migrated that into the character of Bea then, who will, like George Willard in Winesburg, Ohio, will interact with various community members with this touch that she has to, literally in one case, with Elam, the shopkeeper, you know, reach out and feel his pain. So
he reaches out and feels her
right
pain too.
Pain, right? That comes up later. Remember later stories. What were you feeling, Bea? Says Elam.
Okay. If I had to pick a thing that links these stories, I would not pick her as that. I would pick this ghost out in the nature preserve. This seems to be the person who links all the stories in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very interested to hear that, Vic.
You don't think so?
No, not so much.
Kindred? You don't think Kindred connects these stories?
I think Kindred is very, very important, very interesting to me. But I think Peter would come next, probably, in my list of connectors. This young man who's come up to be the pastor of the church. He's young and has no family, so you know they got him on the cheap. And he winds up not only messing around with Quinn as an interview, but you know he's reporting, and he's become a part-time pastor, which gives Quinn great amusement. So I think Peter would be, but I'm glad that you like Kindred. Very glad.
It's very Yellow Springs in that, no, it's very, I should say Shawnee Springs in that the Presbyterians have these outsized expectations and demands of Peter. And Peter is doomed to fail.
absolutely doomed to fail. This young man is supposed to double the congregation in a year. You know, that's not going to happen, especially given his shyness. He doesn't even want to go out and talk to the people in the new development. So that's doomed. But he falls in love with the town. And I could relate, and you can probably relate, Vic, to falling in love with this town. I fell in love with it in 1980 and have been here ever since.
Well, you're a keen observer, Ed. I'll give you credit for that. At one point, you're right. One of your characters. Oh, yes. They've got this reputation of ultra-liberal activists when, really, they're all cowards, pretenders, and wannabes.
Well, that's that opinion. That's Elam speaking. Another angry man, for sure, who winds up getting himself into a lot of trouble by burning someone in effigy. But he dearly loves the Glen, or, I'm sorry, Glenora Wood. So, you know, this town does have a lot of activists, living legends to my mind that I've tried to do justice to.
And you've also got this college in your book, Burke, and you just mentioned the effigy. I seem to recall an effigy back in the day at Antioch College. I seem to recall a terrible thing where there was a hanging of something on campus. I don't know if you remember this, Ed, but...
I hadn't, but the longer you talk, Vic, yeah. I do remember that.
It was in the back of your mind there.
It maybe came out of my unconscious. You're
okay.
Right.
And this time setting on this one, this is what, 15, 17 years ago on some of these stories?
Yeah, 2008 is the present time of the stories.
Okay. So not too many of them have cell phones yet.
Correct. And I try to set stories where I don't have to deal with very much technology.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, there's MySpace. Not Facebook hasn't really caught on, but they talk about MySpace. Oh. Remember that?
No, I remember the name.
Before your time.
No, I don't even want to admit that I'm aware of that ever existing. You're listening to the Book Nook on 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. Which character is the most like Ed Davis?
Well, I would probably have to say Peter.
I was going to guess Peter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I really relate to Peter. He's very naive and innocent, but well-intentioned, and apparently he's a darn good writer because he wins Edith Ann's heart, apparently, through his writing. I, too, was once a naive innocent who came to a town called Yellow Springs, Ohio, after a divorce, and I wanted to write the great American novel, just isolate myself in the garret, you know, and type. I had a great electric typewriter at that time. And those were the days where you typed your novel, and then when you made changes, you had to retype the whole thing.
IBM Selectric?
No, I didn't quite get into the upper echelons that far.
All right. And that novel, how did it do for you?
Let's see. The one that I was writing when I came to town, it's on the shelf.
Still there. Huh?
Right, but the next one and the next one after that, you know. I've published 4 works of fiction now, and I'm awfully pleased to be able to say that.
Oh, good. So Peter is the most like you, and which character is your favorite? Is it Bee? Who's your favorite?
Bee is... yeah, she gets the word. It's tough because I like a lot of them. Well, I love them all, and they all have parts of me. But Bee, with that big heart of hers and her down-to-earth, colorful speech, and I really liked it that she let Marla, at least first when Marla so rejected her gift of food, I like the way she just let it, you know, just all go by her. It's okay. It's all right. I'll take my soup back. No problem.
Yeah.
And she loves dogs.
The first time I ever came to Yellow Springs was in June of 1983. I can remember walking into this little shop downtown. It was a quiet middle-of-the-week day and just being amazed by this place and what they sold and the owner. I had a good talk with him. And you have a shop in your stories that reminded me a lot of Earth Rose.
And well, it should. That definitely is the model. But I certainly would not want anyone to think that the owner of Earth Rose, Ed Oxley, I think was his name. Mm-hmm. I barely knew Ed. Well, I really didn't know him. And Elam is a whole other nightmare of a guy, you know, mm-hmm. with these deep, terrible losses and the way he takes his anger out on his customers.
Elam and Ed have virtually nothing in common other than the fact that they like the same merchandise.
Yeah.
It's very much like the merchandise that you would have found in Earth Rose, which now if you go by the spot where it was, there's absolutely no trace that it ever existed. And it was such a kitschy little shop. You'd go in there and they sold crystals and he sold Birkenstocks. And I remember he got really upset when he started getting competition because Birkenstocks was his cash cow.
Right, I mentioned that.
I heard rumors after I moved here that back in the day, back in the 1970s, if you were walking along Xenia Avenue, and it was a very different town then, I understand. It was very quiet, not a whole lot of tourists. And if you walked by the window of Earth Rose, which is a part of your story in the book, not Earth Rose, but this imaginary store.
Right, Arjuna Imports.
Arjuna. If the American flag was out in the window, then if you were in the know, then you could go in there and you could score some weed.
I didn't know that, Vic.
That's what I was told. Now, this could be completely untrue and made up and imaginary. I'm not casting aspersions on history or trying to create any kind of conspiracy theories, but this is just what I heard. The American flag represented, which I thought was a nice touch.
Freedom.
Freedom, exactly.
Right, freedom to choose. I'm glad to know. And had I known that beforehand, I might have worked that apocryphal story into my book.
Well, I knew Ed. I never asked him about that particular detail, but I'm sure he would appreciate the fact that we're talking about his shop because it was really a place that was his identity. It really was.
Yeah.
Let's go back into this. I have a favorite character, and I know you can't guess who it is, but the favorite character is very much connected to this shop. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Would it be the dog?
No. She makes a cameo. She's a young woman, and she's got a crush on the clerk.
Nina.
And she's my favorite character, and she just is barely in the stories. She's only gets like half of a story, right?
Right.
But I loved her.
I am so glad to hear that, Vic. Mm-hmm. She was so much fun to write. You know, she's totally got her own voice of a young person. And whenever you do that, you know, you throw your voice into somebody that's awfully different from you. And she is. But I tried to, you know, modulate the slang and not take it too far. Maybe I looked up a few things online. But I thought I had her sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a crush like she does that she's not going to act on other than to fantasize that she's stripping down in the store, et cetera. I'm really glad. And then what happens to her at the end, where the other half of the story, that character, gifts her. I don't want to give any plot spoilers, mm-hmm, yeah, but the interaction between the two, I hope, worked for you also.
I liked more her teenage, just complete obsession with this guy who was barely even aware that she existed. Now, I want to talk more about him because, as I said before, Kindred or whatever they're calling him when he works in the shop, it seems like his name is different in the shop.
I don't think so.
No, okay.
Yeah, I think he's still
Kindred. Well, this, to me, he's like this ghost-like presence, but then he's not.
When I turned the corner on magical realism and decided to include some, you know, not only I could have had it that Kindred was simply ghost-like, and he, you know, once you see him and now you don't, you know, and that could be explainable. B looks away, you know, he disappears. But when I decided to go whole hog and go ahead and have some magic realism, he was the perfect character, you know, to really carry that for me. Mm. And he did a great job. Glen Helen is a place where I often feel magic. In 45 years of rambling there, I've seen some strange things. But more than that, it's the vibe that's there. There was a young man that approached me 15 years ago on a snowy day and did ask me if I was a ghost. I loved it, and I just stored that away till the appropriate time. And as you suspect, Vic, things come out of our unconscious at the appropriate time. And I call that writing when that happens.
Well, we had Eric Johnson on the other day, and he's got a book out that's a history about Hugh Taylor Burch and his daughter Helen, who's the person that Glen Helen is named after. And clearly, your affection for this place comes through in these stories. They're continually going back in there, and there's a sacramental aspect to the waters.
Very much so. And while when I think of the Glen, the major loves for me, you know, the cliffs and just the trails, but what would the Glen be without waters? It just, you know, it just wouldn't have that life that it has, even with the trees and the birds. So the magic waters, and Bill Felker was the one that told me about the the magnetism theory or legend, that because Yellow Springs water, you know, has this magnetism to it. That's why the town is so open and liberal and generous. Mm. Well, I had to include that after he told me that. But yeah, the water. And wouldn't you want to drink the water and be baptized in the waters? Well, sure you would, I think. A lot of visitors there do that and drink the water, even if it does have chemicals from farmers' fields. It's okay, you know, a little bit won't kill you.
In your stories, you also have a looming threat of development. And this harkened back to me to that book by Rick Donahoe that you and I have both read. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole issue of let's build houses in this beautiful area. Let's totally change everything. And we have protests in here. And I think the favorite moment for me in your stories is when they bring in this woman who's Shawnee from Oklahoma, and she gives this little speech. I love this speech.
Well, that really pleases me too, Vic. I like that speech also in Hazel Tall Mountain. And while it will seem to some readers probably far-fetched that the Shawnee people just happened to be visiting, they did visit. It's been 15 or 20 years ago, but a colleague of mine at Sinclair kind of brokered this deal where the Shawnee came in to see their old homeland. And my buddy Bill, he was a part of that, and he described a lot of the behavior that went on. And there was a lot of ritual going on out at Old Town, where, of course, the town used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So here they were, conveniently passing by in my story, and they provide a really good, dramatic, you know, resolution to something. I don't want to give away too much of the plot.
It's a great speech. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest in studio, Ed Davis, his book, Here Where We Stand, The Shawnee Springs Stories, Linked Stories by Ed. And isn't that the beauty of fiction, is you can say whatever you want. You can imagine anything you want. You can write anything you please.
Almost. But if you have a writing group, and I'm a big believer in writing groups, your group might bring some things to your attention that you need to know about. And my wife and I laugh, we'll be reading a novel by somebody, and we'll say, boy, it really jumped the shark there on page 376, didn't it? I don't think the writing group would have let them by with that. I don't always take the advice of a writing group, and I had a good one. Bill Felker, Diane Chittister, Susan Carpenter. But you really can't just do anything if you have hopes to publish and if you have hopes to draw an audience. Well, I'm a small press publisher kind of guy. I'm not courting the millions, but I do want to give readers, you know, bang for their buck. I want to give them a book that's worthy of them, that they can believe in and see it as credible and magical. And I would like to think even healing in a book like this.
My fantasy about unbridled fictional freedom is just a fantasy. Give me an example of something a writer's group would call out and say, no.
I wrote that first story, and Marla did not go to the Glen. You know, she has lost her son, who was a devotee of the Glen, and she's moved to Shawnee Springs to be close to that location, and eventually she'll wind up there. So I wrote the first story, thought it was pretty good. It had everything it has now, except she didn't go to Glenora Wood in that story. Well, they were right. They were so right that Marla needs to connect with the water and with her son. You know, how did I not see that? So there's the value of a writing group. They turned it, I think, from a pretty good story into an excellent story.
They suggested she should go to the wood?
Yes.
And you weren't going to do it?
No.
Huh. Well, I can see not letting her go there right away myself. But I'm not a writer's group guy. I'm just a guy who reads a lot of writing.
You do.
And I have my own opinions about these things. And I was tickled to see you do mention in one of your stories a guest that I've had on the show a couple of times. I was very surprised because this is a fairly obscure guest.
Who would that be?
Jose Ramos Horta.
Oh.
Back when Irwin Abrams was still alive, he used to bring Jose over here.
Wow.
Not here specifically, but to the old studios. Yeah. And we did a couple of interviews. And then he went on to become the president of East Timor.
So who knew?
You just never know.
That's right. Interesting. And he's in the panoply, you know, of great Antiochians, and that's where I stole him from.
He is in there, along with Leonard Nimoy.
Not in my book.
Not in your book.
Oh, okay.
And you know, Leonard Nimoy, he didn't go to Antioch College, but he went to one of the, remember when they used to have all the satellite universities?
Yeah.
He went to one of them. I think maybe it was in Austin.
Okay.
Yeah, Spock.
Who knew that?
Well, I knew that.
But Vic, you are the owner of much obscure lore, literary and otherwise.
And basically that's the extent of it. I'm a generalist. I know a lot about a lot of things and very little about specific things.
I like that definition.
And I know that this is a book that people who are familiar with Yellow Springs should enjoy or hopefully will enjoy. And people who are not familiar with Yellow Springs, I think, could get a lot out of it, too. It's called Hear Where We Stand, The Shawnee Springs Stories, written by Ed Davis. And we really appreciate you taking time to be with us today.
Well, you're very welcome, Vic, and thank you for inviting me to your show again.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO, where we have over 1,200 interviews now archived at wyso.org. You can listen to them anytime you like, and we will archive this one as well eventually, but right now you're listening to it on the radio, and isn't that fun? Stay tuned. You're listening to your public radio station, WYSO.